Welcome
to Cheers to Business.
Welcome to Cheers to Business podcast.
My plan is to do the best I can today.
And you can create your own path.
Then why aren't we doing this?
Everybody, welcome to Cheers to Business podcast. My name is John Kubak.
And once again, friends, this is John Hill.
And today we have a really special guest. I had the opportunity to meet this person a couple years ago. He came out to our organization and delivered an amazing presentation, movement, you should call it. Welcome, Stephen Shedlesky. Welcome, Stephen.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, John. It's great to be with you guys.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. This is our first time kind of doing not only teleconference, audio and podcast, but also international.
Right. Yeah, it's a bunch of firsts here for us. We've been more of a having drinks at the a brewery and different business locations.
Yeah.
This is our first kind of launch into technology. It's kind of cool, huh?
Yeah, and then just nice that we can get outside of New Braunfels, bring New Braunfels some value that's outside the city. So, Stephen, so give us a little background on yourself and how you came to work with Start With Why.
So how I came to work with Start With Why was pain. I graduated out of business school and joined a large organization in one of their accelerated management programs. It was called a leadership development program. And I loved leadership, and I studied leadership in college. The only issue is I forgot to ask them in the interview process what their definition of leadership is. And it turns out there is no standard definition of leadership. I define leadership, as I'm sure you guys have a similar definition, around being a positive steward to the lives that are in your care. And the organization I was with, their definition was more akin to profit and loss. And are you white, old, and have gray hair? It was more aligned to authority or management rather than leadership. On my first day on the job, 1,000 people were let go in the organization. So it was tumultuous. It was post-merger. To make sort of a long story short, by my first year anniversary in the company, I walked into work and they let me go. And the reason they let me go is because I was mentoring a number of interns, a disproportionate number of which turned down full-time job opportunities, citing conversations with me. So, I guess being called a rebel with a cause. And so that's when I discovered Simon's work, and Simon Sinek's work, Start With Why, and it was just right time, right place. I got lucky, and that's a bit of a formula of success, is L-U-C-K. You're in the right place with the right people at the right time. Just ask Bill Gates, right? If he was alive 50 years earlier, it'd be a different story. Maybe he'd still be successful, maybe not. Simon's my order. He put into words the world I wished to live in and contribute toward. And I feel so fortunate that I've been able to join up and make the type of impact together and with him. But I'd be doing it anyway, even if it wasn't with him.
Well, that's a story I think we both can really connect to, both John and I. One of the things I've always, when I have this conversation, is I struggle to understand, what is the disconnect, you think, from those old, grizzly, gnarly white dudes that have been living in that world for so long that they give you that puzzled look when you start talking about these things that they can't quantify? You know, they're like,
sure.
Show me how the ROI makes sense on inspirational leadership and the value of that. And I mean, you almost get that look, you know, when you're like whistling to your dog or something, or something that kind of looks like, what are you doing? I get that same type of feeling. What do you think that is?
So the explanation I have is it's a generational thing. So the reason you can make generalizations about a generation is because they came of age at the same time. And so not all baby boomers are like this. There are some who are early adopters and believe that, you know, as we do, that work ought to be something that we enjoy, where we feel like we belong, where we're safe, that work has meaning, that we're valued and valuable. I mean, that's good for business, by the way, long-term business. But a lot of the leaders who are in power today from the top down, came of age and began to rise up the ranks in their careers in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, which were relative boom years. And the theories being proposed and popularized by people like Jack Welch was around rank and yank, right? Where you rank the top 10% and promote them, and you rank the bottom 10% and you fire them, which just does wonderful things for your culture. I'm being, you know, obviously sarcastic there. But it essentially is creating conditions of fear. And by the way, how do you define performance? You know, and like Navy SEALs know that trust is really important to do your job well. Well, how do you break trust? You essentially create an environment where you incentivize people to backstab and step on each other's necks to get ahead. In the 70s, 80s, and 90s, the thought was the purpose of business is to drive shareholder value. That makes no sense whatsoever. What that essentially means is the CEO of a business is supposed to turn around and support shareholders rather than the very people who are delivering those results. That's like a head basketball coach turning his or her back to his or her players, looking up at the fans and going, "What do you guys want?" And actually listening and trying to implement that. That's stupid. And how does that make
some could say that's happening right now in the NFL and the NBA and those sort of things, that there's a lot of, you know, interference with the game and how things are, when things are working well, and I think this is a real life example of when things are not working well, with, you know, interference of things or people that shouldn't be. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think the most important thing is how it makes the players feel, who are the ones that end up getting the results and the ones who end up making the fans feel great or not. And so the role of the coach.
Make the people come, right? I mean, that's what they
come to
think.
So like the obvious follow-up is, right? So what I know, I struggle with this myself because I'm walking through this now in some ways. But what does that conversation feel like when you have it with that 55, 60-year-old leader that's giving you that look when you're walking through some of these things and they're like, "Yeah, but where's the results in that? Or where's the, how does that impact my sales at the end of the year? How does that impact my, I don't know, whatever, IRR, whatever the things are that people try to measure their success with now a lot of times in that position?"
Mm-hmm.
How do you help them understand the value in those sites?
I'm not in the business of convincing. I'm in the business of inspiring. And so if someone says, "Prove to me why this is right," or "Prove to me how this will help my ROI," I go, "Nah, I don't need to. Good luck. Lead the way you wish to lead. Let me know how it goes. If you learn something, I want to learn it. You know, I'll share my truth. You're allowed to live in yours." And I would rather spend more time with people who see the world this way and who believe that the purpose of business is not to drive profits at all costs, but it's indeed to do right by your people. So your people do right by each other, and then your people do right by the business. No duh. I want to feed those people. I don't want to waste my breath on people who say, "Prove to me why this is right." I'm done. That's fine.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten you yet.
Yeah, and John's example was, you know, someone challenging, but I even liked, and I know we're going to get into this in a little bit, but mm-hmm. I even liked in Simon's book where he had kind of talked about, or you were describing actually, because I was listening to the audio version, mm-hmm. you were describing how Simon was able to remove himself from that same situation and cheer from the side, and that's what it sounds like you're doing. You said, "You know what? Fine, you go for it. I want you to do well. I hope that you do well. I think I have a different way. But you're not going to, you know, I'm not going to pull you along," right?
Sure. And, you know, the message hasn't reached you yet, and I hope it will. Now, if you happen to work for one of those people, or you feel as though you're stuck in a situation, I mean, that's challenging. And so what do you do with that, where you feel like you're pressing up against someone who doesn't see the world the way you see the world, and you're like, So, I mean, you've got options. One option is you choose to be the leader you wish you had. And chances are, even if you're not the boss or not the manager or don't have any direct reports, you still have influence, right? And leadership is not a title. Leadership is a set of behaviors. And the only requisite of leadership is followers. People will go, that John guy, I like where his head, I want to talk to him more. And all of a sudden you become an informal leader. And either the jerk leader gets intimidated by that and fires you or demotes you or whatever, or they say, wait a second, there's something here. And all of a sudden the tail can wag the dog. But if you're stuck in a situation where you're being led by someone who is rather a manager, manages the numbers rather than leading people, we all have choice, and you don't have to work for that person. You can try to find another person within the organization who does see the world this way, or indeed find another organization and another leader who does see the world to put people first.
That was probably about the best way I've ever heard that articulated. That was really good. That's really what we're trying to go for here, is right? Give that type of value, and a lot of our listeners, I think, are probably finding themselves in that position. I have a background in organizational development, so I've often heard when I speak to these type of things, like trying to make time for leader cast events or whatever that type of stuff is, you know, that I see value in.
Right.
I'm looked at as somewhat of a maybe younger person in some circles. And
some circles, not this
circle. Not this circle, unfortunately. But
wise, you have wisdom.
Right. I've heard the term like, well, that's Mickey Mouse stuff to me. I don't get
that. Yeah, I've heard that too.
Or and I'm like, well, you know, you gotta understand that there's other people in this organization other than you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, and I was gonna, this is one question I do have, I haven't had to ask you ever. I didn't get a chance to ask you before. Mm-hmm. Obviously you and the whole Start With Why team is about inspiring people, right? To change the world. But probably to the outside, you seem like self-help, right? Or what mm-hmm. could be contained in that category in some way. Do y'all combat that stereotype, or do you have something to say when people ask you about that? Because I really don't feel like you are self-help, but you could assume that you are. Right.
Well, our work is all about fulfillment. And what we know about fulfillment is that you can't do it yourself, you can't do it alone, and you can't do it for yourself. We view ourselves, and you've probably seen this, John, in Find Your Why, we're part of the Help Others movement. We want a section of the bookstore called Help Others, because that works way better, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if people want to put us in self-help, that's fine. All I care is that the work actually helps them, and that they're inspired and have tools to then go help others. And indeed, that's what makes life worth living. And that's what makes our careers meaningful. Listen, I've been called a motivational speaker. I don't identify as that. I've been called self-help. I don't identify as that. But whatever you want to label me, so long as it helps you, cool. And even better, if it inspires you to help others, that's what we're going for.
Well, I just think that when I've ever listened and read, you know, the Start With The Why content, it always speaks to me in a way. It's not really self-help, but it's like when you hear somebody say something like, and it, you don't really know why, but it hits you right there, and you're like, yes, that's why. Because I worked at what you were talking about, your first experience was, I worked in that organization. If you can imagine going from the transition from a smaller organization to being bought out, to going mm-hmm. through that whole thing and seeing people that you came up with in the organization over 10 years, you know, lose their jobs and do all that type of stuff. And I know I saw during that time that it wasn't those guys that were all about numbers that ended up making it. And I remember coming through that time, and it was really hard for me. It's like, I struggled with it. I was like, why does that happen?
Like, maybe I should be harder. Maybe I shouldn't care as much.
Right. And I know that I was fortunate enough to have a good leader that was about people, right? And was inspirational and knew that the dynamics had played a part in that. And I just couldn't really, you know, compute, you know, and really figure out why it was playing out this way. But now I know that that was a strategy at the time, that it wasn't a long-term strategy for that company, because I know after the recovery, they struggled with talent. Yeah. They struggled in a lot of ways that they're still struggling now.
Yeah.
And so from a business standpoint, I saw what the long-term implications were. And you know what? I left that company, and now I'm in a lot better situation. And a lot of it was about a lot of the things that you guys talk about, that inspiration, leadership, and things we talked about when we were in business school.
So, give everybody kind of a picture of a day in the life of Stephen Shedlesky, a day in the life of Start With Why. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of hard work. I've seen what you've done, you know, a little bit, a slice of it, maybe more than others. But there's so much that goes into it. Can you kind of walk us through what that looks like and kind of what you do?
Sure. So, I mean, I love variety. So I love to say that, you know, no one day is the same, which I love. So I'll start with the company in general. I mean, we're committed to a vision and a bold goal, and that is to change the world. And the way in which we wish to change the world is that currently we live in a world in which the vast majority of people do not feel fulfilled and do not love the work that they do. And we imagine a world in which the vast majority of people wake up every day inspired to go to work, feel safe while they're there, that they're valued and valuable, and go home at the end of each day feeling fulfilled by the work that they do, that they make a difference in the lives of other people. And indeed, if we work in those types of organizations, we're going to change the world. Because not only do we have better relationships at work, we bring that home and we bring that to our communities. And that can actually change the world. We don't care about business at all. We care about people. And we just can influence a lot of people's lives by going to where they work. It's called scale. So everything we do is to achieve that aim. I can start there. Our team, Start With Why, we're an education company. We help leaders and organizations who are inspired by Simon's message become the types of leaders and organizations that he espouses. We help them with that. And the way that we do it, we talk about it across low touch, medium touch, and high touch. So high touch is anything that we show up live. So John, what we did with your organization and gave a talk and did a Q&A. We do workshops and consulting, anything that we show up in person and we work with you and your team there. There's mid-touch, which is like this. We show up live, but it's virtual. And then low-touch is anything that can have value while we sleep. A book, a guide, an online course, and anything like that.
I like the mid-level. You know, I think that's cool because now there is an opportunity to do so much more than you could 10 years ago, right? I mean,
sure.
There's so much that you can do and so much value that you can bring in this sort of setup. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, and it's always greatest to be in person. That's where it's most impactful, and it's tough. I mean, it means travel. It's more expensive. We've got to be away from our families, but it's what it is. But yeah, technology can avail us some really cool opportunities to connect at scale. In terms of my role in my day to day, I'm really proud that about 70% of my role is really focused on ensuring that our team, we're now 23 people, live our message from the inside out. It's been something that I've been a staunch believer in since I joined this team over 5 years ago. And we don't get it right and perfect every day, but we die trying and we're striving to do it. So that's a lot of fun. And the way that shows up, it's people practices and people growth and coaching and our culture. As well as our products and marketing and social media. Everything that goes out into the world, I typically have something to do with it to ensure that it's pure, that it represents the intent of who we are at our best. And then I still get to service some clients out in the world who are committed to being people-focused and people-first and helping them be as successful as possible in it for the long run with it.
Can you tell us a little bit about, I'm just curious, like, if I were you, like, I imagine you have some pretty cool experiences of seeing some, you know, just remarkable changes you know, at an organizational level and as a, and a personal level. Can you maybe share with us, you know, what sticks out to you? Like maybe it's a
experience? Yeah, sure. So two things come to mind. So I'll do first at an organizational level, then second at a personal level. And these are just two stories that stick out once you asked it. The organization that comes to mind is a company called In Situ. They're based out of Hood River, Oregon, about an hour east of Portland, Oregon. They're Boeing owned, and they make unmanned drones. They're called UAS, unmanned aircraft systems. And they have about 7 to 9 feet wingspan, and they essentially fly over either troops on the ground or fly over top of dangerous areas, like through forest fires, and provide intelligence to people on base, troops on the ground, and lives are saved. So their why, which we helped them discover about 2.5 years ago, is to improve the course of history. That's their why. And when you think about it, that's pretty big, and they have some pretty big stories of when they've done it. But it's also, you can improve the course of history by one small interaction of stopping someone in the hall being like, are you all right? And that could actually, that could change their day and indeed change their life because someone listened to me and took the time to have empathy to make sure that I was okay. And maybe I wasn't, you know? So that's improving the course of history. And what's really cool, because I don't always have an opportunity to work with an organization for that long. I've worked with them for 2.5 years and I've been back to visit them 10 times over those 2.5 years. And one of the most recent times I visited them, I gave a talk at their all hands staff meeting. And they have about 1,300 staff now. And they had a lot of people coming in remotely, like via video. And there was about 400 or 500 people in the room. And I had given an all hands talk earlier on in the journey, like 6 months into working with them. And we finished the talk and it went well, but there was a little bit of a feeling of like, of cynicism and yeah, but, or this is the 31st flavor of the month, you know? And it was really cool. It was really cool to come back 2 years later and give them the next talk on how, you know, what it means to be a why-based organization and really dig deeper. And what was really cool is when the talk was done, it went well, was well received, good energy in the room, great questions. But what was cool is everyone stayed after and everyone kept talking. And it's not that they had more drinks. They just had their one or two drinks and had them longer. And people different departments and different teams were coming to speak with one another. And it was a tangible, palpable feeling of this is cultural shift and change. And somebody came up to me and said, this is the longest and the most energetic we've ever had people after an all hands. This stuff is working. And that was pretty cool. On the personal front, there's someone who I've worked with closely in Toronto who's become a very, very close friend. And we met and you know, he had the itch. He knew there was something more. He was the leader of an office site of about 150 people, and he was really realizing what leadership is and what leadership isn't. And he unfortunately had his boss was someone who leads by fear, leads by appearance, certainly an authority, but not a giver, not generous, and not a true leader. And we did his why discovery, and he's completely in like a year and a half, completely turned around his entire life. He no longer leads that office, but he leads a smaller team. His team's results are amazing, and it's in real estate. And real estate is like dog eat dog, look out for individual. He's created a team environment where they look out for each other. And it isn't about making the most money yourself. It's about making as much as we can for all of us. And he started up he shows up to serve. I mean, it's rippled everywhere. It's rippled at home. It's rippled at his work, into his own health, and how what he's watching, what he eats and drinks and exercises, like, it's totally shifted his entire life. Now, I won't take credit, and it's not all because of the why, but it certainly helps. And it's a key piece. So those are just two examples that come to mind.
So I feel like I'm jumping into the Reuben report here. I got like all these questions running through my mind, and it's like, this is great.
Cool.
Another thing kind of, as I think through that, like, so I'm thinking of the individual you're just speaking about. And it sounds like he was at a place to receive that information. And I think that plays a big part of, you know, somebody's experience and their personality and their, I guess, kind of philosophical views on things. Hmm. Have you ever run into a situation where you're walking through these type of interventions and you're like, this guy is just not getting it. He is so stuck in like transactional leadership role that I don't know if he'll ever get this.
Yeah, and it's not my job to get it for him. you can lead a horse to water, and you can also shove the horse into the trough and let them drown.
You tell us you're gonna drown, buddy. You gotta figure this out, or what did that conversation sound like?
I mean, there aren't too many conversations where I've sort of, someone's hit me that hard that they're like, I don't agree with you. I personally haven't had too much. But when I have had that resistance, and I've heard some of those stories from Simon and our other team members, typically when people come back at you hard at this stuff, it's because they're in pain and they're lost and they're suffering. And here's someone who's giving them another way or a way, and the response is fear and rejection and to make the deliverer of the message wrong. And so for those people, it's, hey, I'm happy to continue the conversation in private, or hey,
you're burning off some dead wood for them, and that's going to be painful whenever they have to work through some of that, right?
Sure.
That's kind of the theory.
Sure. I mean, I just had to deliver some really hard feedback very recently this week to someone who's a close friend and partner of ours, and they showed up in a way that wasn't aligned with who we are, and from a brand integrity perspective, I needed to let them know. And did they respond in the best possible way they could have in that moment? I don't think so. Could I have been better? Absolutely. Could I have warned this person that this feedback was coming? Sure. But I didn't. And it didn't go great. And that's okay. And I can't pounce on it and fix it. I just gotta let it breathe and trust that's what's right will emerge.
Steven, not to cut you off, but
yeah.
I'm just listening to talk, and you're so confident, right? Is your confidence... I know it's because of your passion and believe in what you do, but were you this confident before you worked for Simon, or has your confidence grown over time?
I also get a heavy dose of, I mean, unimaginable transparency.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a really fine line between confidence and arrogance. And I'm sure sometimes people perceive me as arrogant, and that's not what I'm going for. And I'm really lucky that I have some amazing friends and people in my life, on our team, friends, my wife, who are exceptional experts at letting me know when I'm going into that zone and notching me down. I mean, it.
Amen to that.
Yeah. So I've got a lot of people in my life who very quickly either shoot me a look, send me a text, give me a conversation, you know, that I just like, all right, I'm going in there. So, I mean, when I joined our team 5 years ago, you know, so there's this guy, Charlie Kim, who's the CEO of a company called Next Jump, and they have an amazing culture that's focused like yin and yang, being and doing, really, really, really cool stuff. And he has this, I don't know where it came from. I prescribed to it and I love it. That there are essentially two types of people. There are people who spend most of their time in confidence, and there are people who spend most of their time in humility. I would identify myself as someone who spends most of their time in confidence. It doesn't mean I'm confident about everything. There's some stuff in my life that I'm not good at, and I know I'm not good at it, and I attempt to spend humility in it or just avoid it altogether because I just suck at it. But what's interesting is that when you're someone who spends most of your time in confidence and in self-assuredness, when you derail into arrogance. And when you're someone who spends most of your time in humility, when you derail into insecurity. And yeah. So when I joined our team, I was like, Simon and Kim, our CEO, I can do so much, you know, put me on a stage, let me do this, give me all these opportunities. Sure, we haven't developed much of a relationship, you don't trust me, but I can do all that because I'm a young millennial and I'm really talented. And their response was, slow down, kid. And they had me, you know, Karate Kid painting fences. And I'm like, why am I painting, you know? Because they needed to know that I was worth investing in. And so was I confident when I joined our team with Simon? Yeah, too confident, and it bit me in the butt. And I had to learn where is it my place? And how can I create the conditions for people to build me up rather than knock me down because my confidence is putting me in a couple weight classes way too high, you know? I've probably learned it a little bit late, but I know it now and share it with others that I think 100% of our success is based upon the risks other people take on us, whether it's a champion or a mentor or a boss or a customer who buys from us. So the question is, as an individual in whatever you're doing in your life, what are the conditions you're creating for people to want to take a risk on you?
So that's
what I focus on.
You almost have to inspire other people to want to take that risk on you. You might have to see something in you.
Yeah. Just make it so easy for them to go, absolutely, I'm going to support you or whatever it might be.
So as I'm listening to this conversation, I'm hearing three guys that probably sometimes are a little too confident and also have some pretty good experiences of being humbled a little bit.
Sure.
Also, I'm hearing some guys that are probably a little bit more extroverted most of the time. What I ask this question a lot because we speak to leaders a lot. I ask them, what would you consider yourself? Would you consider yourself more of a data person, numbers guy? Or would you consider yourself more of a people person? You know, that means all kinds of stuff nowadays. But the point is that you're either extroverted or introverted or somewhere in between there, right? What does that sound like for you when you have this conversation with people? Or do you see any trends or trajectory there that stands out of somebody being able to? I see it a lot in business where a lot of times the guys at the upper level or engineering backgrounds or things like that, and I can see how that sometimes if they're not wired or in the right place, and they struggle to grasp these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
But do you see that changing, or is that something you notice? Or I guess give me your thoughts on that.
Are you just saying in terms of like leadership in general between extroverts, introverts? Like what's the
right and being able to grasp the start with a why type of concept?
Sure. Well, so one of the things I love about all of Simon's work is it's grounded in biology. And so whereas some other people enter into the purpose and values work and they make it in really airy, fairy, fluffy, coachy language, and it's just not accessible. It's true, but what I love about Simon's work is it's grounded in science. And so it has an exceptional way of cutting through to some engineers or data scientists or actuarials. I mean, I've done this work with a room full of 150 actuarials, helping them find their individual why. And it worked. Turns out they're human too, you know? My dad, introvert, not a touchy-feely, emotive guy. But when I say emotive, it doesn't mean he has less emotions than I do. He's just not as good as speaking about them, but he still has them. But given an opportunity to ask the right question, get in the right context, he's fantastic, just as anyone can be. You know? I do identify myself as more extroverted. I know that. I derive energy from conversations with people. I started this conversation tired, we're into it, and I'm going. Like, that's extroversion for me. I do have some introverted tendencies, like I have limits, but I do identify as extroverted. To me, I think it's a bit of a disadvantage at times, or listen, each has it, right? Extroversion means that we're quicker to speak, you know, we're quicker to pull the gun from the hip and shoot and speak, right? So for me, I have to work very hard at shutting up, at being silent. Often people expect me to be the first to speak or be the first to give an opinion. And I practice very hard at saying, well, what do you think? You go first. I want to hear from you. And really working hard at that. Because if you just ask it once in a while, it doesn't work. You have to be consistent with it.
So I think that's a pretty good segue into Simon's new book. And you were the audiobook narrator, which was amazing. I think excellent job. I have a few questions about that process.
Yeah.
But so new book, Find Your Why, right? When was it released? October, or was it a little before October?
Just before September 5th, I believe it was released. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. It's fairly new. Tell us about that process. Obviously you were heavily involved. I think, tell me if I'm wrong, tried to be an insider. Potentially was the first, second chapter the story about the grandfather? Was that the story about your grandfather?
Mm-hmm. Not
you were really close.
It wasn't my grandfather, but yeah, thanks for remembering. I am very close with my grandfather. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about the new book and what the process was for the organization to kind of step into this kind of follow up to the Start With Why.
Yeah. So Simon wrote Start With Why 8 years ago. And you know, it did really well. and what was cool is it didn't make the bestsellers list to start, because it started to grow very slowly. But the sales of Start With Why have been consistent. It's fantastic, which is essentially the message of the law of diffusion of innovation, like how ideas tip and scale and grow. It's happening with that book, which is perfect. And what Simon said to his publisher, if you want a bestseller, it's not going to be me, but I'll give you something that will be steady and that will continue to grow year after year. And that's what's happened, which is pretty cool. And the main criticism that Simon and our team received from Start With Why is, I get it, I'm good, I'm on board, but how do I actually discover my why, and how do I do this stuff? And so it only took us about 8 years to get that one together. Simon, Peter, David, Kim on our team, who's our CEO, is heavily involved. And I was involved. I helped them quite a bit. And obviously I do a lot of the work, so I helped them refine and improve and input. But it took them 2 years to write it, because it's hard. I mean, they took three people's voice and attempted to make it into one under, you know, Simon's larger voice as well. And writing a how-to book about processes that we're continuing to improve and refine as we go. So, I mean, the book has been received really well. It's doing very well, which is fantastic. And, you know, it would be selfish for us to keep the process to ourselves, because our team is 23 people. And of those 23, only, you know, a good handful and a half of us actually deliver this work to clients and people out in the world. It's selfish for us to keep it to ourselves. If we are actually indeed committed to our vision, we have to give it away. We have to put it in people's hands. And so that's what we're really proud that we've been able to do.
So tell me about the process for actually doing the audiobook. I think that's really cool. For all of our listeners know that I'm a big audiobook reader. I love audiobooks. And so I'm really excited to hear your voice on there.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of obvious, but Simon's not very egotistical. So for him to give you the opportunity to do the audiobook and get your name out there, and a lot of people are going to listen to it, I'm sure was opportunity for you. Is that how he saw it? Is that the conversation, or was it, something different?
It was a wonderful accident. So I was sitting in this very seat at this very desk, and I was having a conversation with Kim, our CEO, and she sort of, I don't know whether this is June or July, she's just like, listen to these. And she starts playing these audio recordings. And I'm like, what is this? And she's like, these are people that the publisher's recommending do the narration of Find Your Why. And I'm like, these are awful. it sounds like I'm in an elevator. Like, they're terrible. And each one was, you know, they were fine, but it was just like Brilliant's audio. Like, it was just bad. You know? And I said to her, like, you know, because so Simon wasn't gonna read it because it's a how-to book. And Simon's not a how-to guy. Simon's the why guy. And it's David and Peter's processes and work. But it didn't make sense for two people to read it in David and Peter, and it didn't make sense for one of them over the other. So we were like, well, let's just hire a narrator. And so in the seat that I get to sit in as chief of staff of our team, I just got to sit with our CEO, who I work with carefully, and just had the good fortune of having my opinion asked. And I said to her, these all are awful. What if I did it? And she's like, huh. She's like, take the introduction or take a piece of the book and do an audio sample. And we'll send it by Simon and myself first. And if we're good with it, we'll send it to the publisher. What actually happened is, Kim let the publisher know that they were considering me. And before they even had a sample, the publisher just Googled my name and listened to a bunch of stuff. And they said, all right, let's do it. They were in a rush to get it going into production. I did do an audio sample for Simon and Kim. And Kim, our CEO, is a stage manager. That's like she studied stage management and theatrics. So like she knows this stuff and she can take an A+ and make it an A++. So her critique is fantastic. And Simon loved it. So a really like such a true honor of being able to do it. It's very, very cool. And to have something like that live out in the world is neat. And for some reason, a lot of people are doing the audiobook. I mean, I know the book is better to have in hand just because it is essentially a how-to guide and a workbook. And it's good to see the diagrams and to write in. A lot of people are using the audiobook, so we don't really know why, but we're cool with it.
I think this whole audio, you know, thing is kind of catching on as far as audiobooks and podcasts. I don't have any data here to show on that, but
And I think also like the audiobook for me, like I didn't realize, I guess, because you don't go into a bookstore anymore anyway, right? You just buy it on Amazon, which, you know, most people. But I didn't even get an opportunity to like flip through the pages or whatever. I was like, oh, Simon's book, buy it, of course. And so then I start reading. I'm like, first chapter, like probably, I don't know, after, I think probably midway through Simon's foreword, I was like, I'm going to have to buy a hard copy quickly. But, you know, I think it still has a lot of value. It just doesn't have the value that y'all want to provide everyone, right?
Yeah. And I mean, people want it in audio just because, to your point, John, it's how a lot of people want to consume it right now on the go. And I love audiobooks as well, especially in the car. I know that it's great to have it in hand. We did design it so that people can still take notes as they go. But yeah, there are some diagrams and stuff that we do provide on a website. So if people go to bit.ly/FYW resources, all of the stuff that's in the book is there so they can download a soft copy.
I love that y'all are very open source. I mean, that was a big thing that I learned about the organization when you came and talked to us. Doesn't that scare Simon? Doesn't that scare your organization? It's a little scary because, I mean, obviously you are innovating and coming up with better ways to refine and help people.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's scary, but can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, like, we're in the tools business. Like, we give people tools, you know, and it's what they do with it that's impressive. Like, here's a hammer. You can build a bench or you can build a house. So long as people don't say, I made the hammer. No. Like, it's our hammer. Like, give us credit. You know, don't take credit for the work and say that it's yours or say that you're endorsed by Simon Sinek or Start With Why. That's lying. And that's not cool. And we don't stand for that. But what we do stand for is impact. And to hoard and keep all of your intellectual property to yourself for selfish reasons of greed and profit is not going to help us change the world. So yeah, it's scary, but it's also exciting, and it's also the right thing to do. And so, yeah. And how else are we going to improve unless we share all of our secrets so that people can make them better and we can keep, you know, it iterating what we have. So, you know, it's the one of the reasons I love this company is because, yeah, does it make business sense? No, it makes business sense to keep it to ourselves and charge more, but that's not what we're into. We're into impact. We're a for-purpose business.
So that's a great lead in the question that I've been dying to ask for about 20 minutes now.
That's it?
You know, we talked about the transition from, you know, whatever, the Lean Six Sigma or whatever they call that crud from the 80s and 90s that turned into 80-20.
Kaizen.
You know, yeah, whatever they call it. You know, basically we promote the top 10 and whack the bottom 20%. So that type of stuff too. But
Frank and you,
so you see where we've evolved now to, you know, what we're talking about throughout the context of this conversation. And it sounds like you guys are kind of on the forefront, and you maybe already have some ideas of what that looks like moving forward. And you look like you're a fairly young guy yourself. I mean, what do you see coming down the road as far as the things that organizations are going to have to do and leaders are going to have to do to inspire people to continue to inspire people? Because, you know, the start with the why, the find your why is going to have to evolve over time, right? I think Simon talked about that when he was talking about the millennials and kind of what their
leaders
them are now and leaders eat last.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it's like 20 years from now, 30 years from now?
So one thing, I think we need to avoid some nuclear warfare because that can mess up some progress.
Potentially.
Yeah. So it seems like things have calmed a little bit, but who knows? But I mean, that's one thing is we can have this, like, you know, you talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We can have this type of conversation of fulfillment. There were no radio programs in 1929 about fulfillment and meaning and purpose. It's about how to take a ration and make it serve your family. And so the very different contexts. We're very lucky that we live in a time and in a place within this world where we can actually have this conversation. That's pretty cool, you know? And I care a lot to be a part of contributing to the conversation where we can keep it that way. It doesn't need to be too much affluence, but just enough that we're comfortable. So that's one piece. And I think it's very important to mention as a foundation. Malcolm Gladwell wrote a great book called David and Goliath, which essentially proves that just because you're big does not mean you are stable. Just ask Lehman Brothers. That thing collapsed in days. And so, you know, gone are the days of the big 1970s, big insurance building towers. I mean, they're vacant and it's stale and it's old and it's not working. And so there's huge shifts happening in models. But what I am inspired by is that the leaders of tomorrow, the leaders of 20 years from now, are largely millennials. And though millennials do have some challenges in terms of I want to make an impact, but I don't know what that impact is. But if I just say impact, then maybe I'll make an impact. No. Like, you have to figure out what your moral compass is, what you care about, what impact do you intend to make, and indeed what your strengths are that you can use to contribute toward that. Millennials as well, you know, obviously the technology piece that, you know, technology is fantastic for forming connections, accessing information, speeding transactions, but it's crud at developing meaningful relationships. There ain't no app for love and there ain't no app for career fulfillment. You can meet people on Tinder, but you still have to fall in love with them and then work at staying in love with them. So technology is a great tool, but it is not the be-all, end-all, and a lot of millennials need to learn that you still got to do the really hard stuff, because that's where all the worthwhile stuff is anyway. But some great things about millennials is that we are a lot more inclusive. We're a lot more open-minded around humanity, around gender, equality, across everything that you can imagine. We're, I'd say, some of the most accepting people as a generation as a whole, which is fantastic. Inclusive leadership, yes, like that's great. And I also think, you know, so long as people figure out indeed what impact means to them, and it's not just an Instagram story or some stupid shoes that you got sent because you have 10,000 followers, then I think there's a lot of good that's coming. And I think what is next as well in terms of technology is right now a lot of companies, like the way technology and devices are created, they're created to suck our attention. And I think we will see a shift. And I think that we will see tech work for us rather than us working for tech, which is what's happening right now. It's like consumption and like, it's like, get it away. And I think we'll find a shift in some genius technology that will actually integrate and work for us rather than the other way around.
Oh, that's interesting. I think when I think about kind of what the next 20, 30 years looks like, I think a lot about kind of see a lot of aggregate theory kind of going on with business, like, you know, with Amazon kind of getting into all these different businesses. And I just see the real, obviously, I don't have any answers here, but I see that what we're talking about here is really important now. It's going to be extremely important 20, 30 years from now.
Like, remember that time when Google sold YouTube to Amazon? That was the downfall of video on the internet. Absolutely, right?
I think you spoke to when you're talking to about, you know, yeah, Tinder is a fabulous thing, especially if you're a young single guy. You know, I missed the whole Tinder thing before I got married, but I guess what you see that relationships, I guess, and having that ability to have the awareness to connect with somebody on a one-on-one level and understand what drives them and what makes them want to go home happy every night, that's going to become even more of a needed survival skill, you know, especially in business.
And so, yeah, when
That's something to think. I don't want people to lose in the conversation.
Yeah.
Well, and just your point, you know, when I think about what are some of the best competitive advantages for a young person today, patience and eye contact.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
Patience with like the now, and actually the ability to find something you believe in and then pursue it and see it through. And then as well, the ability... like eye contact is universal, and the fact that if you can make somebody else feel safe and comfortable, you have a competitive advantage.
Wow.
So
that's good.
I don't know.
No, I think that's exactly, and I love one of the things that really drew me into the Start With Why organization and Simon and eventually, when we got to meet and follow you, is the safety part, right? And how you feel, right? And one of the really good things, kind of shifting back to this new book, you talk about how you feel a lot. And I also like the direction of the explanations of the how. Anybody of our listeners that know, our first episode, we talked about Simon Sinek. So all our whole show, pretty much every other episode, it comes up. So I've been on this journey, and I've always been confused with the hows. Can you kind of go through quickly the golden circle and just kind of explain that to everyone?
Sure. So the golden circle is a concept that Simon discovered, not invented, because he didn't make up purpose or values. That's been around for millennia, but he codified it. So the golden circle is a bullseye, three rings. The very outside is what, then how, then why. In the very center of the bullseye. So what? Everyone knows what they do, products they sell, services they offer, or their job, role, or function, or indeed any identity you have in your life. I'm a father, I'm a son, that's what, right? Hows. Hows are the actions you take to be at your best, and the actions you take to stand apart from people who do about the same thing that you do, your peers or your competitors. Your why is your purpose, cause, or belief. It's not to drive a profit, that's a result. Your why is what inspires you to get up out of bed every morning. What's the reason you do this? And so that's the concept. And, you know, to find our why, It's based on, it's our origin story, right? It's who we are, and who we are is where we come from. And so to find our why, we actually go to our past. We can't do it alone because we can't be objective on our own. We can't look ourselves in the mirror and say, what's my why? You know, it doesn't work that way. You find a friend, someone who you trust. They don't need to know you very well. And sometimes it works better if they don't know you very well. That way they can't finish your stories for you. No, that's not what happened. Like, that doesn't work, right? And you tell them these stories of when you've been at your best and even when you've been most challenged. And indeed, some of those challenge stories are fantastic because that's when you've grown most, right? When not everything went well, but you came out the other end better or you overcame something. And when you share those stories, there are themes that come up. And those themes both form your hows and your why. So the trick is, when you look to find your why, you actually find a bunch of hows. And just one or two of them stand out. And those are the ones, that's the cream that rises to the top that goes into your why, right? Your contribution and your impact. Those are the two ingredients of your why. And then the other themes that are just as important, those become your hows. They're the actions you take to be at your best in service of bringing your why to life.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Like we talked about earlier, you really need to get a hard copy of this book and work through it. And I like, from the standpoint of how it reads, at least the way you're reading it, because I haven't read it yet. I just listen. Yeah. A lot of people like to make fun of me about that. It's very instructional, very understandable. And, you know, not, to give away a little bit, Simon's kind of one of his themes is to keep it simple, right?
Yeah.
And it's a very keep it simple sort of book that anyone could pick up and understand.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, as we're starting to wrap up, you know, obviously we really appreciate you coming on. One of the questions that we kind of like to ask all of our guests is, if you could go back 18, 19 years old, what's some advice that you would give yourself? So this is not even millennial. You'd be like, Generation Z, Gen Z, right? If you're 18 and 19 today, mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give that person?
Oh, my Lord. I mean, so there's two parts. Either what would I tell me back when I was 18, 19? So, and then there's also what would I tell an 18 or 19 year old today is the two things I picked up. So one,
that's true.
What I said to you guys around our success is dependent upon others taking risks upon us. That's just something that has been so salient for me. That I probably always knew, but didn't necessarily internalize and guide me. That's like the biggest thing that I've learned that I would just really tell myself again, or really center myself on as I went out on my journey. To an 18 or 19 year old today, I would say that it is so easy to compare yourself to others, but the most successful people compare themselves to themselves. That we live in a world where everyone has a better vacation, everyone has better looking friends, everyone has better, because you look at it through a filtered experience of social media, Facebook and Instagram. And indeed, it is. We know, the studies are in, the people who spend more time on Facebook and Instagram are more depressed because they're constantly comparing other people's curated lives against their plain, boring real life, you know? But the fact of the matter is everyone has plain, boring real lives, you know?
Yeah,
and
no,
so I would, to an 18 or 19 year old, I would say, resist the temptation to compare yourself to your peers. Compare yourself to yourself. Figure out what matters to you and compare yourself against that every single day and moment.
I think that's pretty much good advice for anybody. But yeah, definitely for, you know, definitely people coming up and hitting the team. Is there anything that you'd like to share? Obviously, Simon's very well known, but website, you know, social media, your personal stuff, because I know you push out content as well. Anything that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I mean, if this stuff interests you, we have our website, startwithwhy.com, and you can link to all of Simon's social media stuff there. But yeah, if you Google Simon's name, S-I-N-E-K, or my long, complicated Polish last name, you can find all my stuff. And we're at all the usual places and always sharing things to inspire and to engage people. And what I'd say is, you know, our message, guys, is together is better. That this thing called life is, it sucks if you pursue it alone, right? That's the difference between suffering and struggling. Suffering is a solo pursuit. But if we struggle, that's cool, right? If we struggle, we can be vulnerable and say, I'm really not doing well with this. And we actually have to admit that to someone. And if we admit it to enough someones and the right someones, they help us. And so I love that you guys are doing this together, because, you know, you do this show because you want to live the messages that are being discussed in this show. And I love that. So keep doing it and keep spreading it, because it's valuable.
Well, and on that same note, man, I just have to say, I see it in the content you guys bring and the message that just resonates so much, is because people are going to work and they want to feel like what they're doing matters, you know? And I think the reason why that the conversations like we're having right now, or even people will pull up tomorrow morning into their car and listen to it, is because they want to figure that out. You know, and I think at the end of the day that, you know, if we never do anything else besides this, I'm good with that. I'm good with creating, helping people frame that in any way they can. And so, and to you guys, I admire that. And that's why I was so excited about having this conversation at 9 o'clock and, you know, after a full day of battery.
10 o'clock for Steven.
So, yeah. And even later for you up there on the East in Canada. So with that, man, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Likewise, guys.
Thank you, Steven. You know, I'm a huge fan of all y'all's work, and we look forward to everything that's coming out. And I'll get to see Simon here shortly. Never seen him live before, so I'm super excited about that. I'm sure there'll be like 17,000 episodes of me talking about it afterwards. But
now, be ready for us to stalk you out on Twitter, too, because we're all over that. We do have some millennial in it. Well, I guess you are a millennial. I do hang out on Twitter a lot, so but we'll see you on Twitter, man.
That's why he's not a millennial, because there's no way I'd ever be on Twitter. Anyway, Steven, thank you so much.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Cheers to Business podcast. My name is John Kublank.
This is John Hill.
And as always, cheers.
Cheers.